Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I am Brad Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include James Toth, Damon Locks, Sarah Bell Reed, Ava Mendoza, Jeff Parker, and so many more. This week, I'm excited to have my friend and fellow podcaster, among many things. She does so many things. It's Katie Hendrickson. Katie and I, we've known each other for a little while, and she's got her podcast is called Sound Off, Katie Hendrickson. I keep trying to put that extra D in there. I'm sorry. And it's so good. It's fantastic. She's on season 3, which debuts this week on March 6th. And the first guest on this season is Liz Pelly, who wrote the incredible, the book Mood Music about Spotify. It's been all over the place and is essential reading. But Katie, she does so much. She's a journalist. She's puts on incredible events in the Fayetteville and Bentonville, Arkansas area with her Trillium Salon series. She's a publicist. She just does a lot of cool stuff. And so I thought she'd be a great guest. She was, of course. And wanted to celebrate the third season of her podcast because it's the first two seasons are really, they're just really good. And I learned so much from them. It's always a great mix of guests that I'm familiar with or not familiar with. And I just feel like no matter who it is, I learned something new about them as artists and just, I don't know. It just kind of expands my horizons and I always leave every episode just kind of feeling really good and positive. So that's no bad thing in these days. So check it out. Like I said, new season drops on March 6th. Thank you all for listening. As always, if you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to this, because that stuff helps, algorithms and all that bullshit ruining our lives. But hey, I feel like this podcast is a net good. So, get in front of more people. And if you really want to help keep it going, keep Foxy Digitalis going, support all the work that I'm doing, patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis is your friend. But now, speaking of friends, Katie and I recorded this last week and had a blast. I hope you enjoy it. My guest today is a writer, a podcaster, a journalist, a publicist, a producer. I'm missing lots of hats, I'm sure. It's Katie Hendrickson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Brad. It's awesome to be here.
So, speaking of podcasts, you, like, among the many things you do, but the big reason we're here is that next week, or like 2 days after this comes out, the new season of your podcast, Sound Off, comes out. So, what can we expect?
Yeah, so I am launching the third season of Sound Off. It's music challenging the status quo is the tagline. And so it's intentionally left so that I can talk to lots of different types of musicians and musicians who are doing things that challenge the status quo. Or in this instance, for the first episode of this season of Sound Off, I'm talking to journalist Liz Pelly. And she has her new book out called Mood Machine. And it's a full account of looking at Spotify as a platform and about how it's a tech platform. All these things that Spotify does that are bad for musicians, about how our brains have become like rewired when we're listening to music to where we're just like putting on mood music, basically. They want to get people to like get on there to like just kind of passively stream all this random music all day and get them in these nice moods and whatnot. So she's my first guest. But then I also have Sion Kuti, Fela Kuti's son, who now leads Egypt 80. He's on the podcast. Mary Kuhishumidan, who has an album coming out with the Kronos Quartet. And she is a U.S. composer, but Armenian roots. And then her family fled Armenia to Lebanon. And this whole project that she's worked on with the Kronos Quartet deals with all the trauma and war and grief from her past. So that's a little like synopsis of some of the things to expect in this season.
Wow. That's I'm excited. I'm really excited. I mean, I'm excited about all of it, but I'm excited for the conversation with Liz Pelly, because everybody needs to read that book.
Yeah, like, it's so good. I think I first caught her writing about Spotify when she was writing in The Baffler, and I was really into it. And you know, I personally am into looking at systems and how what they're doing and how they're affecting different people and communities. And you know, a lot of people are like, oh, Spotify's cool. It's awesome. It gives us all access to music, you know? And I've been really, I'm like talking about how it's not cool. And people are just like, well, you're just such a negative person, you know?
I was going to say, I'm so used to being like the bummer at the party. Mm-hmm. it's like, no, let me tell you what is actually like the thing here.
Right. And exactly.
I've been at this a long time. You've been at this a long time. And I thinking just, how it's changed almost everything, like about how people I know in music try to survive. God, I don't know. It's awful and it's brutal.
I'm excited that people are having these conversations now, though, because I've been having them with certain people for a long time, and now it feels like it's actually hitting a wider. It's like people who they love to listen to music, you know, and they're actually thinking about these things and the economics behind all of these things, and why it's so hard to release music or be a musician or be a music journalist, all these kind of things. So,
yeah, and I'm excited, like, with her book too, because it makes it easy to point people towards one thing. It's like, okay, you're expressing an interest, like go read like this. It's easy to find a book rather, you know, I would send people articles and stuff, but I feel like this book, and the book is so in depth and just like powerful, but
it is.
We could probably talk about the book forever, but you already do that the first episode of your show. What were some of the biggest challenges like with this? So you're in your third season now. Has it gotten easier, harder, stayed the same?
I'm not really sure exactly. I mean, like, so at first I think it was tricky because I have a background in actual public radio broadcasting and like a more traditional radio setting where you have a block of airtime that you have this 59 minutes that you this is what you have to fill exactly, whatnot. And it doing a podcast is a totally different mindset. I think honestly that it's, you asked me whether it's gotten easier or harder. I think it's just, I think it's hard to, I think the longer that I'm doing this, the harder it is for me to like really hone in on my guests because there's so many amazing people I can talk to. Doing amazing things that would fit within what Sound Off is doing. So I think the first season was really, it was really kind of more contemporary classical type situation with like people like Missy Mazzoli and Caroline Shaw and Ali Shem. But there were other people like Kazem Nakhvi, who does modular synth stuff, but also he's also in the new music world as well. Right. But this season is really opening it up because I've got Afrobeat, and then I've got the 90s DIY woman led band Tsunami. They're going to be guests on the podcast. So I love it that like I did pick away. I didn't want to shrink. I know at first, so the person who I work with is Amy Westervelt, and she runs Critical Frequency Network, and she has her own podcast called Drilled, which is a really amazing environmental podcast. And she's an environmental journalist who's doing so many great things. But she and I worked at Venus Scene together back in the day, which was a women's print mag, women and music print mag. And so at first when I was talking to her, she was like, oh, do you want to do like all like women in music? And I'm like, well, no, I don't want to like just have one little zone like that. And I didn't want to, obviously didn't want to have a genre that I had to stick to. So I do like the fact that I can go all over the place with it, but it can be challenging in the sense of like, okay, there's so many cool things out there. What am I focusing on? You know, so.
Yeah, no, I relate to that. So because most people know me for covering like pretty like experimental stuff. And that's what Foxy Digital is sort of bread and butter has always been. But when I started this, I wanted, like when I came up with the format, I was like, I want it to be a thing that's not just that. And which is great, but it's also, yeah, it's so overwhelming. I'm like, I want everybody to come on, but I can't. Like, right? I'm one person.
Yeah. I mean, just imagine if we had whole big teams. I mean, that's something that I talk to people about all the time because I'm in media and people who are just, you know, listeners to radio, like if they're listening to a podcast on NPR or whatever, like, or a show on NPR and they're like, oh, I love that show. And I'm like, do you know how many people work for that one show? Like how many people are just working on that show? It can be, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's like, yeah, they have all those people that do all those jobs. I have to do all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that can be tricky, but it's also liberating in a sense because it's like, I'm truly independent. I'm deciding, I'm making, calling all the shots. I'm not like beholden to metrics and numbers and all these kinds of things. Right. So.
Yeah. Right there with you. Before we get into it, I'm curious if there were any like kind of certain moments or that, like in this new season that as it happened, like we were talking to somebody that kind of just blew your mind, like stopped you in your tracks.
Well, I definitely like,
not
so I
like not give.
Yeah. 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 No, I'm still like I picked out pretty much most of my season, but I haven't done all the interviews yet, but I have say like that the ones that I've done so far, honestly, that's one of my favorite things to do. It's like these conversations are always blowing my mind and they're just so incredible. I have to say that talking to Soon Kuti, it was like, you know, he's bringing Egypt 80 to the United States for a tour. And so I was like, hey, listen, like, what about like with this new administration and everything? And it was like, for me, it was uplifting because, you know, he's dealt with a lot of repression and a lot of things. And he's an activist himself. And he had amazing things to say about how to deal with this and what's going on and, you know, the power to the people, right. And the power of music. So.
That's awesome. Okay. So new season's March 6th. How often do episodes come out?
Every two weeks. And you can go to any place where you would listen to your podcasts. That's one of the many reasons I'm working with Critical Frequency. Like my podcast is the odd music podcast. Most of the podcasts on Critical Frequency do have to deal with climate change and environmentalism directly. I mean, not that mine doesn't. I mean, I'm sure I have conversations that deal with that. But so they disseminate the podcast into all the different, the nice distribution. It's available in all the places. You can subscribe anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Okay, everybody go do that after you listen to this. Wherever you're listening to this, you can listen to that. Yeah. Okay, well, let's get into the whole thing here.
Okay.
And as always, to begin, the first question. What is the first song that you remember?
Oh my goodness. And I'm actually... didn't pull up my notes that I sent you. I'm going to do that right now because I remember this was a hard one for me because I grew up in music. I grew up playing chopsticks on my grandparents' harpsichord because my grandparents were early music scholars.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I grew up playing chopsticks on my grandma's organ, so... there you go. That was one of my first music memories. Well,
I grew up in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and at some point I did move to New York, and people are always just like, they had their assumptions about what it was like to grow up in Arkansas, you know, and I was like, no, that's not how I grew up. It's just my childhood was very distinct. So, okay. Let's see. Lullabies. This is what I was talking about. Yes. So probably my mom was always singing me to sleep. And a lot of times I was like one of those really needy kids who wanted my mom to just sing and hang out with me until I fell asleep. And I remember like being like my mom trying to walk away and I tell her, Mom, I'm still awake. So my mom sang me lullabies. She sang me Summertime and My Favorite Things at bedtime to help me sleep. So those are very formative songs for me.
I still remember, this is like sort of tangentially related here, but like, I just remember the first time I was like a teenager and I heard Sound of Music, My Favorite Things was very ingrained in me in childhood, mm-hmm. but then hearing it as, I'm sure it was the Coltrane version, was like the first like jazz version.
Oh, of that.
But it was one of the most, I don't know. I feel like it was like this really formative moment of my life, but it just blew my mind. And every time I think of My Favorite Things, like I think of those two sort of like that dichotomy of the, you know, Julie Andrews, Sound of Music, and then.
And the Coltrane. Very different.
But yeah, so you said your parents were like, did you say they were new music scholars? Is that what you said?
No, my grandparents were early music scholars.
Early music scholars. Oh, so, very cool.
Yeah, and my grandfather, they had an harpsichord, and my grandfather was an oboe. He was a music professor, and he was an oboe professor, but he also collected early reed instruments. And then my grandmother was a violist who also did viola da gamba. So I was always around all these things. That's I was always around Bach organ fugues and all these different things. So it's just like, I was literally born into like that, you know? So
were your parents like super into music too?
Yeah. My mom has always played music. She started as a upright bass player and a pianist and then got into cello. My dad loves music, but he played flute, but he stopped playing flute before I've never heard him play flute. So, but he's just like a super huge music buff. Like he is into all this stereo stuff and like getting the sound right and all that kind of stuff. And then my mom later became, I have a sister and she and I, like once we left the house, my mom says her empty nest syndrome was to buy accordions. And so I think my mom has like, I don't know, her collection's like, it's above 30 accordions at this point. And my dad likes to buy them for her and fix them up. He loves eBay. So he'll like, you see this accordion and it might need a repair or something. And he's like, I'm ordering it. And then he'll like fix the bellows or whatever it is.
I still have like 6 or 7 years before my kid leaves at least. But I think I was having this conversation with him the other day. I was like, I wonder what weird random thing I'm going to start doing once I have. Don't have a kid here that I have. So accordions, that sounds like fun one.
Maybe you'll collect like theremins or I don't know.
I feel very inspired by Vinnie Golia and want to start collecting gongs, but I don't know that my partner would be super stoked about that.
Wouldn't want to hear gongs all the time or have the space for the gongs.
I think that the gongs. My crap already takes up too much room. Anyway, okay. Well, do you consider yourself a big crier?
I cry. I've always been very emotional. I cry a lot. So yes.
So this, I'm sure this was a fun question for you and probably really simple. What's a song that makes you cry?
So that one I had to really think about because I cry to so many songs. I mean, I cry to like random pop songs that come on the radio. But I'm thinking of like truly really weepy songs. I'd go with Mahler's Adagietto from his Fifth Symphony. There's something about what he does there that just like puts me in tears every time.
That is, yeah, I can, I talked about Mahler's Fifth on the show recently. I think it was actually the Sarah Bell Reed episode. Oh, I think okay. Sarah talked about it. I think she picked that as like her, like the objectively greatest song of all time.
Nice.
But
great minds think alike, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. which everyone listening is like, it's like, Katie helped make that episode happen. That's why, like, aren't you and Sarah
well,
are.
Well, Sarah and I are friends.
But, yeah. but the thing I love about that particular passage in the piece is how it's like, because, you know, it's like right before the finale and it's right. It's so like, it just brings it down to this. It's so like, I don't know. It so feels so intimate and vulnerable before everything kind of just.
Yeah, like, there's,
you know, the technical term, but
there's so much tension built yeah. up in that, you know, and it starts like, so it starts very slow and like, and then it like, and it's really, it's slow the whole time, but it just builds and builds and builds all this tension. And then like, I love it that there, like, there's so much room for things. Mm-hmm. And then yes, it just kind of erupts. So yeah.
Amazing. Okay, well, what's a song that will put you in a better mood?
Well, I also have a lot of songs that do that because music is just so integral to everything that I've always done. I picked for this question, I picked Haitian Fight Song by Charles Mingus because it's just I want to get up and dance every time it goes on. It turns on, I hear it.
Yep. Every time because like, you know, it starts with kind of, it's like a sort of a little bass solo kind of thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
then
yeah.
As soon as it, and that gets me excited, but as soon as it kicks like the boom, 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 like yeah. it kicks into that main riff. It's just like, oh yeah. Okay. You can't sit still.
Nope.
You can't.
And so how can you be sad when something like that comes on? It's just impossible.
Yeah. I mean, Mingus is Mingus, but this is like, amazing. it's just, and like the way the song builds up and everything, like, I don't know. It just, yeah, it's a song that makes you feel alive. Okay. What is objectively the greatest song of all time?
Okay. And this is, I realized that I didn't even write down an answer on this one.
Well, you gave me an album, but I'm going to make you pick a song from the album.
Oh.
Because, okay. You know, I make a playlist for every episode, and I can only put one.
Oh, yeah. So I picked Nina Simone's album, It Is Finished, because I adore everything about that album. Nina Simone's one of the people that I listen to all the time, and it was one of my proudest moments as a parent when my child decided that Nina Simone was his favorite singer.
Oh, that's
cool.
He
loves Nina, and it's like, and he has since he was very little, because he's been around her music for so long.
Right.
So,
like, obviously, like, Nina Simone has made so much incredible. I'm curious, like, what is it about this album in particular that especially kind of draws you to it? I mean, I love this album too, but I'm just really curious.
I think because it's there's so much depth of like her singing, but also the band that she's with, the rhythms mm-hmm. and the textures. It just got so much. It's just it has everything in it to me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the band is like so good on this. Like, yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, but I have to.
A song.
I have to put one song. So yeah.
I mean, Funkier Than a Mosquito's Tweeter. I mean, like that song is brilliant. So I'll just go with that one.
Okay. I mean, there's not a wrong answer. Like you could just put like all the songs on a dartboard and throw, and that would be, you know, that would be the song to pick from the album, because every song on this record is kind of perfect.
Yes.
Do you remember, I'm curious, like the first time you like heard Nina Simone, or like when you first, like it really hit you?
I feel like I really got into her music when I was in college. I worked at this really awesome used bookstore called Dixon Street Bookshop. And Don, one of the owners, he brought in his music collection, and we just play CDs he brought in, and he had Nina Simone. And I think that's when I really just totally fell for her, you know?
Man. Shout out Dixon Street Books. Yes. It's like one of my favorite places in the world.
Yes.
Okay, I need to come. Yeah, I need to go to Fayetteville again soon.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the song you used to love, but like you heard it recently, if you think about it now, doesn't quite do it for you?
Well, all my answers tend to do albums over songs. I'm such an album person. But
so am I, and that's why I made this all about songs, because it's harder.
I don't even remember the title of all the songs though. But I feel like, so I was living in New York in my 20s, and you know, when you're in your 20s, there was all this magical stuff happening. And then there were like these indie bands that would come out with their albums. And I just like really loved them. And one of those albums was the debut album from Beirut. And I just was obsessed with it. And I listened to it all the time. And I even interviewed Zach Condon at some point, at his apartment. But now I listen to it and it just doesn't do anything for me. And I'm like, wow. Cause he played like that whole album. He did all the parts himself, you know, like he played all the instruments and he just tracked it all and everything. And like, now I can hear all that and it doesn't sound like it's that gelled together. But when I was in, when it first came out, I was like, I love this. It's amazing. Listen to all this brass and blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah.
I think that was like, I remember when this came out and you mentioned the fact that it had like brass instruments on it, to me, I thought was really, that made it stand out. And I'm sure there was like other stuff in that world that I don't know, like that wasn't really my world, but I just remember thinking that's really cool. Like, I mean, even now I feel like I wish I heard more stuff. I was talking about this to somebody, like more like experimental, like composition, like drone stuff that used brass instead of, get lots of strings, you get lots of, you know, just like, come on, man, bust out a French horn.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it was like, because Beirut was very clearly in like the indie rock landscape. Mm-hmm. And especially like, so I grew up listening to lots of international music and folk music of different places and jazz and all this. But to hear this indie rock that was like, bringing in these kind of influences at the time seemed really cool to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't, before I got your, I don't remember the last time I even thought about like this record. And so I was like, yeah, I don't know. And in some ways I was listening to it again. It's like, oh, this kind of feels like a precursor to a lot of the, like, I don't know, shit like the Lumineers and stuff. Maybe not. It's like better. Yeah. It's better. It's like, anyway, I don't want to go down that road. Fuck all that stuff. Okay. What is, what's a song that people hate, but you love it? Whoever these people are.
Oh.
I don't know if you answered this one, so I'm putting you on the spot.
Wait, I feel like I.
Or maybe you did.
I can't find this question, so.
Oh.
Oh, no, I didn't answer it. Wait, no.
Okay, well, off the top of your head. Pressure's on.
Okay, so, ask me the question one more time.
A song that, like, people hate it and you don't care, you love it. For context, whenever I, like, kind of flipped the tables and somebody else interviewed me as a guest on this show to answer the questions, my daughter hates the song Rasputin by Boney M, which I love. So she, like, anytime I try to play it, she will turn the stereo off. She's wrong because it rules.
Well, that's funny that you're bringing that song up, because my Ambrose, my son, is obsessed with that song. He was like playing it all the time for a while.
That's funny. We'll
see. So yeah,
maybe my daughter will come around. I don't know, but
a song I love that other people can't stand. I mean, and this might be an answer that you're going to be disappointed by, but like, I this is again not a song. This is like kind of shrill high singing. I like it. So like, for example, I mentioned Joni Mitchell later, but when I was growing, so I learned about Joni Mitchell because my mom loved Joni Mitchell and she would put on Blue a lot. And she'd like, be like, I'm putting it on cause dad's out of the house. Cause her voice is so high and da, da, da. And I like, and I've also been a vocalist and I grew up in singing in choirs and doing solos and studying some classical voice. And I like love singing that kind of stuff, but I know that it can be off off-putting to a lot of people. Like, I mean, probably also like some aria, like opera stuff. Like people are very, a lot of people are like, oh, I can't deal with that, you know? So that's, I sorry, it's not a song.
No, that makes sense.
High vocal things.
Yeah, no, and like the opera thing too. Like, cause I know, cause I really love opera and nobody ever wants to go with me.
No.
I don't know. I can't. So, no, that makes sense. That works. Hey, there's no, like the rules are not super strict here. We're stopping the show, Katie. This is it. Never mind.
We're not running this. You didn't provide the answer.
Do you think of yourself as a romantic?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I'm romantic, and I've always had this very romantic nature about me and like in the world, and like just like I was very much like one of those like angsty teens that fell in love very easily and, you know, like romanticized everything. So yes.
I understand. relate to that a lot. What is then the most romantic song?
I mean, it probably changed depending on when you asked me, but
sure.
I decided that I'd rather go blind by Etta James, especially she's got a Live for Montreux version that I listen to a lot. It's just like, oh my God. It's like, it's romantic, but also very sad, you know? She's like, it's like pulling on your heartstrings, and it's like this man, like she's going to rather be blind than see her man leave. And the way she sings it, I'm just like, my God. Like just her whole heart's hanging out, you know?
It's so incredible. It's intense. Yeah. It's, and I feel like I've been saying this a lot with the songs people have been picking for this question, but it's like, God, if somebody ever like sang that about me or felt like that about me, then I've done something right in my life. Other than the leaving part, but like felt that way, you know? Yeah.
Like that someone feels that much about you.
I know. I'd rather go blind than you not be like, dang. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the Live from Montreux version, so I'm going to look that up after this.
Yeah. And at some point she like kind of goes away from her microphone while she's singing and she says stuff and there's some Nina Simone Live from Montreux stuff is also amazing. Like I love, that's something that I also love to do is I love studio versions, but it's also just like when you hear live versions and the way that these amazing musicians can be on the stage and reinterpret the song, it blows my mind.
Yeah, that was when I had Miriam Kindren on the show. Like one of the interesting things like she brought up is, you know, the difference between a song and a performance. Mm-hmm. And how and ever since we had this conversation, I think about this all the time about and these like those are great examples of it's like, yeah, like this people when people think of the song, they often think of they think of like a studio version. And obviously with a lot of these songs though, where it's like a standard or something, it's like, okay, there's the song and then there's all the other, but yeah, like a studio version versus a live performance. And I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but there are songs where it's like the studio version or something didn't ever do anything for me. And then you hear a live version or see it live and it's transformative.
Oh yeah. Totally.
So I think, yeah. Anyway. Okay. What about lyrics? Are you a lyrics person? Do you pay
yes attention? I love lyrics. I mean, I definitely like, I think I since I grew up, especially like I played violin and listened to a lot of orchestral music, symphonic stuff, and like I think I was actually drawn into like structure of the music more than lyrics at first. So I think when I was younger, I wasn't as like, I was like, sometimes I listen back to some songs and the lyrics, I'm like, whoa, these lyrics are not that great. As I got older, I just got really into the lyrics of things. And we go back to Joni Mitchell again.
Right.
So,
favorite lyrics.
I was going to say it again, all of Joni Mitchell's Blue album. Cause I mean, there's just not, a bad line on there, and it's just she's so sparse and so poetic about how she's phrasing things. It's amazing. But I guess I think I picked A Case of You if we had to just go to like one song from that album.
We had a conversation. I think it was the answer to this question. Somebody, Sam Sadomski, picked this song.
Oh. And
he said, one of the things he said that I really loved was he was like, listening to Joni Mitchell will make you a better writer. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, that's so. Yeah.
And so what I will say too, so this podcast is Songs of Our Lives. And when I used to be the music editor at the Rumpus, and when I was there, I started a whole essay series called Albums of Our Lives. And oh, nice. the one that I wrote about was Joni Mitchell's Blue album.
There you go. It all comes full circle.
Yes.
Was your Albums of Our, was it a Young and the Restless nod as well?
No, I don't know anything about the Young and the Restless. I've never really watched.
By Sands through the Hourglass, these are the days of our lives.
No, I've never really watched soap operas.
Sorry.
Okay.
My grandma.
I would know.
Yeah, my grandma was big soap opera fan. And I just, whenever I was, if we were homesick from school, my grandma would come in and stay with us. And so I'd sit with her and watch. I don't really know anything about it either. I just, the line of like Sands through the Hourglass, these are the days of our lives, has lived in my head for the last 30 years. So that's why the whole like notes through the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives. Anyway, that's the whole story behind that. Okay. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
I'm one of those people who can listen to a song over and over and over and over again. That's just very common for me. I can just put it on and listen to it all day and not tire of it. But I think I picked Summertime, the Ella Fitzgerald version, because I think that song for me has just always, the version that she does, it's just always been so, it's such a soothing song to hear, like when she sings it. Mm. And it's like, it's bittersweet too. I mean, the song is kind of bittersweet, but there's something about the way she sings it and that song that just like, I just kind of, I feel so soothed when I hear it. Mm-hmm. It puts me at peace, I guess.
Yeah, no, there is something about it that feels like a sort of embrace.
Maybe it has to do with the fact that my mom sang it to me as a lullaby when I was younger.
Oh. Yeah. Hey.
I'm just thinking about that all of a sudden.
Yeah, let's psychoanalyze your choices. It is one of those songs too, like even though, like I said, it is kind of bittersweet and stuff, but it's also one of those songs that I feel like I could hear it at any time. At any point, I would be, it's like there's not a time I don't want to hear that song.
Right.
So what is the song that you most recently fell in love with?
And I don't know if this is the most recent, but this is the one that kind of caught me by surprise because I wasn't really, this artist wasn't even on my radar. And he he was active before I was born, and Terry Collier. And there's a track off of an album called You're Gonna Miss Your Candyman. And it's like, so like, it's got so much rhythm and soul and heart. And it's just like, I think this past summer I must have listened to it over and over again, like 10,000 times.
It's
I don't know. Yeah.
It's so good. It's his voice. Oh my God. I love his voice so much. I can't remember who, he came up one other time on the show, and that was like, I was vaguely familiar with him, but then it kind of sent me down a rabbit hole because I was like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with this guy's voice.
Yeah. And I think and this song, the bass line is just so infectious. Yes. It's like, whoa.
That's literally my first note here is the groove on here is so infectious. So there you go. Yeah, but it is. It's like, it's kind of like you're like riding a wave or something, and you're just like, and then he's got like this velvet voice, but it's also kind of crushing. And
yeah,
the whole thing is just like visceral and effervescent. And oh my God. And just, you're going to miss your Candyman. What a good line.
But when it's like, it's always so exciting when you come across an artist who's like, has this amazing music out, and he was like fusing all these different things from his life together. Like he was soul, like jazz, folk, funk, all the things. And he put them all together. And, you know, I think I was reading before we were having our interview, and I think he was in a duo with Crosby and David Crosby when in New York for a while, I think, you know, and he was childhood friends with Curtis Mayfield and, you know, I don't know.
He seems like such a, I don't know. I'm sure, I wonder if there's got to be like a book about him. Somebody needs to write a book about him if there isn't one, because it sounds like he's had like this super fascinating life.
Right. And
that's one of the things though I love. And honestly, it's one of the reasons I started doing the show because people ask me this all the time about how, you know, because there's so much music that like now, you know, so much music comes out. Oh my God. Which is true, but whatever. Like, but I was thinking about how it's always going to like, there's never a bad time to discover something. Like this is, he's somebody who, you know, I had no idea really that he existed until 6 months ago or something. Mm-hmm. And then there's this whole world to discover from it. And it's like, I don't know. I love that. And music will find you, like it'll find you at the right time. Yes. Maybe it may be the right time, maybe the wrong time. I don't know, but it will find you. If it's meant to find you, it will find you.
It will.
Okay. Last two questions, two big questions. I don't know. What is the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily because of the song itself, because of what you associate it with.
So again, keeping with my theme of not picking a song, I gave birth to my son. Thelonious Monk Quartet's Monk's Dream was playing. So that is very important to me.
Can you still listen to it? Like, and not, okay.
I mean, I think you mean like not associated with my son's birth?
Yeah, or just like, so when my wife was giving birth to my daughter, we had Jürgen Müller's Science of the Sea on repeat, which was a record made from my friend Norm that I actually put out, but whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, she can't, like anytime I can't listen to that in the house now.
Like, oh, because she's here, because she goes back to labor, the pain of labor.
It's like very visceral. And yeah, which is kind of a bummer because it's like one of my favorite records, but you know, whatever. It's a small price to pay for,
for having a kid.
My daughter being in the world, but. So could you still listen to Monk's Dream?
Because I've listened to Thelonious Monk for a lot of like a long time, and I've listened to so many different things. It doesn't take me back to when I was giving birth, I guess. I mean, it takes me back in the sense of like, it's like endearing in a way to remember that that's what was happening, but it doesn't trigger this like, I'm giving birth.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, I think about that sometimes, not giving birth, because obviously I've never given birth, but like, if there is music that I associate with something like where I can't listen to it now because of those, and I couldn't come up with anything, but part of that is like, I listen to so much music all the time that I'm like, maybe I'm just immune or something. I don't know. But, yeah. And to talk about Monk's Dream, like, I know you picked the whole album, but man, that title track, like the song Monk's Dream is such a bop.
Yes. So you can put that on the playlist. Put that one on.
Yeah. There. That's like another one, like going back to Haitian Fight Song. It just makes me want to get up and move.
Yeah.
Which probably not ideal when you're giving birth, but.
I mean, it's kind of, when I look back on it, I'm like, this is not the most like relaxing, soothing choice for her. I'm like, what? I don't know, but yeah,
you know, in those moments it's like whatever works, like, and I don't even remember how we ended up on Science of the Sea. Like, that was I don't
you're
know,
like,
I don't
oh know we what... gotta get to the hospital, let's grab something.
Yeah. Oh god. Okay, last question. In this moment in time, right now, full, like, it'll change. It always changes. But right now, what is your favorite song?
So when I was thinking about this question, that's really impossible because I just love so many songs. But a song I've always been drawn to and I've sung before, like I grew up singing in choirs, is Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child. And in the last season of Sound Off, I had the chance to interview Tumi Mogorosi, who's a South African percussionist. And he put out this album where there's two different renditions of this, and it's a mix throughout the album, and it's just incredible. I love it. Yeah. Oh my goodness, I'm blanking out on the name of the album right now. It's something about Black music. But it's on Mushroom Hour Half Hour. It's a phenomenal, the whole album is just genius.
It's so good.
So yes, that song just really, it's so haunting and so beautiful. And there's something that I just am always so drawn into.
Yeah, no, it's his version, that album. Oh my God, I love that album. That label is amazing. Yes. If anybody, amazing, a few years ago, or whatever, when I finally, I guess, learned about South African jazz and stuff, and was just oh my God, there's endless amounts of mind blowing stuff. But yeah, the song itself, that's really cool. Like that you sang it in choirs and stuff. I never had that experience, but whenever I was prepping for this, I just started, there's so many amazing versions of this song out there.
Yes.
It's awesome. Speaking of Boney M, Boney M did a disco version.
I've heard that version. Oh my God, I'm gonna have to check that out.
It's so good. I was not aware of it at all. And then yeah, anytime, like I said, I'm kind of obsessed with Boney M, but obviously not obsessed enough that I knew the song, but yeah, it's really good. Yeah, and then the Jimmy Scott version is another one that I love, and I love Jimmy Scott.
So many amazing. It's just and you know, that's I'm really into spirituals or standards, obviously, because we've looked at a lot of these songs I've talked about. I'm fascinated by interpretations of songs, and also songs that are so well written that they can have such vast interpretations, you know?
I think that's a really interesting thing too. Yeah, I mean, I think there's that's an interesting idea for something songs with the, and this is a perfect example because there are so many versions and so many of them are really good and they're all very different. Prince, Prince did a version that was really good.
And, I don't know if I know that one.
There's a live performance of it on YouTube. Again, I went down this rabbit hole. I think I watched about 15 versions of the song yesterday. But
you brought up Prince, and that made me think of Sinead O'Connor's version of Nothing Compares to You, which is also one of my favorite songs of mine. So,
that one, so one of the questions behind the scenes for everybody, there's a section when I send these questions out that it's I think there's six different questions and you're supposed to pick two of them. And one of them, which people have probably heard, is what cover is better than the original? Mm. And when I came up with that question, the two songs, to me, the two default answers to that are Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor and All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm. And it took 60 or 65 episodes
before those were answered. Yeah.
I was come on. Somebody finally, they're oh, this is too obvious. I'm I know, but nobody's. but that's, anyway, this was a lot of fun. Totally got off on a tangent there. So, Sound Off, season 3, March 6th, every 2 weeks. How many episodes in season 3?
That's another thing. I don't have to close it. So it just depends on if I decide to usually there's 10 to 12 episodes for the season. Yeah. So,
somewhere. Okay. See, there you go. So that'll take you through half the year.
Yes.
Quarterly.
And so you may just discover your new favorite record. I know that I've had a lot of listeners who've said they've never, there are people that an artist that I've known about for a long time or been on my radar, but the folks who are listening randomly and they're I didn't know about any of these people. And now I love this music, you know?
That's the best.
Yeah.
That is that's when people ask me why do you do Foxy Dude? So why do you keep doing it? It's that is a big part of it is, when you can introduce something to somebody that becomes this thing they love. Yes. How fucking cool is that?
Absolutely.
Anything coming up for Trillium that you... I don't know if anybody in Fayetteville is or Tulsa
Northwest
is listening.
Northwest Arkansas, yes, has Trillium Salon Series as a live music concert series invite connection with the audience. And a lot of experimental music. We'll do contemporary classical, improvisational. We don't have any concerts actually on the books right now until the summer. We're just about to start launching listening party sessions, which I've been wanting to do for a long time, where we're like actually just like having people pick music that they love and we can all like hang out and talk about really awesome music.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Like reasons to get people in a room, man. That's what we need that so bad right now.
Totally. So yeah, if you are wanting to be part of the community and you are close to Fayetteville, Arkansas, and we produce concerts in Bentonville too, go to trilliumsalonseries.com because we have a mailing list there, and that'll get you all the like latest invites and things like that.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Brad. It was a lot of fun.
Once again, thank you to Katie Henriksen for, leaning in, having a good time, and especially thanks to her for doing her podcast, Sound Off. So, said it a bunch of times on this already, but I'm going to say it again. March 6th, season 3 starts. We'll see how long it goes. It's still in production. But I guarantee you, every episode's going to be worth your time. You can listen to her picks. The playlist link is in the show notes. And as always, thank you for listening. Please leave a rating and review. Please join the Patreon, patreon.com/foxydigitals, or you can go to the Jewel Garden. It's my label. You can pick up some tunes. All that really helps support this, keep this going. Everybody who has done that continues to do that. I appreciate you more than you will ever know. But until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.